Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Celebrate our God-given freedom and faith while honoring our Blessed Mother with Ghirelli's USA Rosary. Each state is represented on this rosary's 50 beads. Red, white, and blue enamel adorn its patriotic crucifix. Get yours today. Shop www.ghirelli.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Welcome to Living It All, episode 13. Today we will talk about what socialism and Islam have in common, because for some reason this topic of socialism keeps coming to mind. And it didn't help that I just watched the HBO's miniseries Chernobyl and finished reading Cardinal Zen's recent book. The kids are asleep except for the four-year-old, so he may come down and say hi, or maybe he will fall asleep. Who knows? Before we begin, let's say a prayer. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Glory be to the Father, who by his almighty power and love created me, making me in the image and likeness of God. Glory be to the Son, who by his precious blood delivered me from hell and opened for me the gates of heaven. Glory be to the Holy Spirit, who has sanctified me in the sacrament of baptism and continues to sanctify me by the graces I receive daily from his bounty. Glory be to the three adorable persons of the Holy Trinity, now and forever. Amen. I found this prayer online because until I became a Christian and started to grasp a little bit, tiny little bit, why Christians believe in the Trinity, I didn't quite understand the society itself. Okay, this is kind of confusing, so bear with me. I'm going to try to explain a little bit, but these are all kind of developing thoughts in my mind over the 5-6 years. So in case you don't know, and you haven't watched any of my talks or didn't read the book, I was a communist for most of my life. But okay, so I was an atheist. I didn't believe in anything afterlife. That means all the solutions that I could find would come from this life. And I also believe that humans were naturally good, and the society, religions, constructed ideas and values about the human person made people become bad and evil, commit crimes, and all the other stuff. So if that is the case, then I believe that there must be a perfect system that we could conjure up and perfectly implement, that that would create a perfect world. And this system, if we did it right, would end crime, poverty, suffering, oppression, depression, famine, and like all the evils of the world, right? So like it all came down to, if we just did it just right, it's almost like alchemy. If we found the perfect formula, then I could turn this pillow into gold. Okay, so that's the idea. And from everything I've read, from Marxists and communists, that was the goal. That is how the world is seen, there is this inherent struggle between the oppressed and the oppressor, and there is a perfect system that will eventually solve this. So for a communist, this road goes through socialism, because like the society is so broken that you can't go to a completely classless society right away. So the socialism is kind of the stepping stone in this perfect order that we can eventually achieve. So in a way, if we take the alchemy idea a little bit further, socialism would be the formula and the end result, the golden pillow. I don't know why pillow. There's a pillow right next to me. That's probably why. The golden pillow would be the end result. So socialism is basically to break apart this broken system that favors a privileged class, you know, bourgeoisie, upper middle class, owners of big corporations, or it's the oppressor who owns the modes of production at the expense of the oppressed. So socialism in its most general form is that the state owns all the modes of production and deals with the wealth that has been gained equally among the oppressed. Okay, so it sounds just wonderful. On its face, socialism on the paper, it sounds like it would work. But of course, it doesn't. And in this sense, the reason socialism doesn't work is the reason why a Sharia-ruled country doesn't work either, without coercion. Both socialism and Islam rely on coercion because the systems themselves are inherently flawed. Okay, so little sideways here. There was a movie back in early 2000, I think. It came out in 2004, I think, called Hero. It was a Jet Li movie. I don't know if you've seen this. If you haven't, it was fun to watch. I really enjoyed it. And a friend of mine really wanted me to watch it because he was really taken aback with the idea that was promoted in this movie. And it's kind of based on a real story of the first emperor that unified China. So this is back in the day, like a few hundred years before Christ. So this is Emperor Qin. And Emperor Qin is going around conquering all these different little kingdoms in China, what we know as China. Of course, people who are conquered are not happy with this, but he goes around and just keeps killing people, suppressing rebellions, you know, whatever, however the conquest goes. So there were a few attempts on his life. So in this one, Jet Li's character is called Nameless. So Nameless is one of these assassins. So he is hired by another assassin, three other assassins who are willing to sacrifice themselves so that Jet Li's character Nameless can get close enough to Qin to kill him. Because of all these previous attempts, nobody comes near Qin. What happens is actually Qin sees through the scheme and Nameless doesn't get to kill him because Qin and actually one of the assassins who hired Nameless believe in this concept that the Chinese call, I think it's pronounced Tian Shi. So basically, this idea of unity under heaven. So it's like, again, this perfect system that finally it would bring peace. So Qin, spoiler alert, at the end of the movie, convinces Nameless, who manages to come close enough to Qin to kill him. So Nameless could have killed him, but Qin convinces him that, look, what I am doing, killing all these people and conquering all these little kingdoms is good. I'm doing is for the greater good. If we unify China, we will be so much more powerful under one ruler than divided under all these different kingdoms. So he asks him, isn't it better that some people die so that some perfect society, some perfect idea like Tian Qi can be realized? It will mean so much for future generations. So anyway, Nameless dies. Qin goes and conquers all these kingdoms, unifies China, and does all these reforms, whatever. And as we know, China is one of the most politically unified and ethnically homogeneous countries in the world. And as a Turk, I know that says a lot. Here is the problem. He himself had this ideal in his head, Qin did. And in this future ideal, it was okay to sacrifice little things, like people's lives, like little kingdoms. It was okay to kill so many people. I mean, consider Mao's cultural revolution. It was all done for a good end, right? Like, when you think about it, if you're after this perfect system that could eventually be realized, like, why not kill so many? Because they, at the end of the day, they're nothing. We are nothing. One life is nothing compared to the perfection of future. So what's funny is that I was reading about Emperor Qin a little bit today, and at the end of his life, actually, he became really obsessed with immortality, and he sent all these different people to find an elixir that will make him immortal so that he doesn't have to die and live in his own perfect kingdom. Yeah, it's like you cannot achieve heaven on earth. Okay, so the problem with this thinking is that in Qin's mind, the whole, the community, the empire was more important than the unit and the individual. You could actually sacrifice the unit or the individual for the good of the whole or the community. And what happens in socialism is that the same thing. Whatever the socialist is, these are good people. And there are many Catholics also subscribe to this notion that a socialistic government would actually be a solution to a lot of problems. So I don't ever want to demonize anybody that they want to go around and kill people so that they have this. But what happens is inherently the ideology itself will sacrifice the unit for the whole. The individual in a socialistic society, the individual doesn't mean that much, because there is a higher goal of creating an equal society. For instance, let's say we have a socialistic healthcare. And the thing is, money doesn't grow on trees. And no matter who tells you what, if you keep printing money, it doesn't mean that you have more money. What happens in a socialized medicine system? It looks great, right? Everybody is going to have equal healthcare. But this would be, for instance, in a country like America, this would be an immense machine. You can't even run the DMV efficiently, and you're going to ask the government to run this gigantic thing that would affect literally everybody's lives in the country, and you expect them to run efficiently. What happens is that the state, this amorphous entity that is composed of individuals, uses its coercive power to get individuals to do what the state wants them to do. It just becomes too strong. And when the state becomes too strong, then the bureaucracy becomes harder. Things become harder to achieve. guess what the state is composed of? The individual. So, let's see. What would happen to this one person who doesn't have any checks and balances? I'm not even talking about religion. I'm talking about a secular system that would hold him accountable. Is going to do when he's met with a hard decision. Like, if I give you $10,000, would you put me to a better hospital? Oh, yes, sir, I will. Corruption will increase. It will increase. I was watching Chernobyl and bribery is rampant. It was the same way in Turkey. And Turkey, you know, it was never officially a Soviet country, but the Turkish government was, especially when I was growing up, was very socialistic. They privatized a lot of the different parts, like Turkish government produced all the alcohol and the cigarettes. So they privatized most of those industries as I grew up because they became just too much in debt and too much to carry. There was no efficiency and corruption was deep. So what happens is that a socialist system is still run by sinful people who are going to fall. But when the state is in charge, there is no one to control them, right? Everybody is their own little god. And a socialist view is just makes this happen, makes this real. When you give so much power and you create such red tape and bureaucracy that once you go in, you can't come out. I mean, this is unthinkable to me in a country in the size of America. Yeah, just watch Chernobyl. It was wonderful. I mean, it wasn't easy to watch, but it was really, really well made. And it shows you, look, not everybody is evil. Most of the people are, you know, they actually believe in this ideal, but it's like inherently flawed. So, okay, so what happens in a socialist medicine? So now we have limited amount of resources because somebody has to pay for the bills. Money doesn't grow on trees. And now what do we do? Now we need to make a decision between people who are valuable and people who are not. So obvious choice is that, look, cancer treatment is very expensive. You are above 65, we are going to deny you cancer treatment. And instead, we will send you to hospice care or pain management. Because you know what? I can take that money that I am going to spend on cancer and give it to a younger patient. Because the older patient, nameless, faceless person who is not your mother or father, really doesn't matter. He had a full life. It's okay, let's take that money because I have X amount of money. I can't keep printing money and magically make it all work out. It doesn't. When it fails, people will be picked and choose. But if you have, of course, $10,000 to bribe the system or go to a different country to get your medication, that's a different story. Or again, eugenics. Right, so we are looking for the good of the state and the society. So I look at you. This has happened in Turkey. I look at you. Look, you have this genetic disorder. And you have this genetic disorder. You guys are not allowed to get married and reproduce. We are going to sterilize you. Because you know what? We are trying to create a healthier, better society. This is a good aim, right? We all agree that we want a healthier society. So you know how that's going to work? We are going to not let you procreate, not let you have kids, and also we are going to enforce that if you are you're pregnant and we decide through tests and whatever that your kid is going to have Down syndrome, you're going to have an abortion. We want a better society. So eugenics will go up. And it makes sense. It makes sense. If you see the world in that the whole is more important than the unit and the community is more important than the individual, it makes sense. Another thing with socialism, and this is, I think, a lot of the Catholics fall into this trap. If the state gives money to the poor, and I am not against some of these security safety nets. I am not against this. So it's not like the state shouldn't help. That's not at all I'm saying. I don't believe that government is a necessary evil. I am not a libertarian, but I'm talking about replacing certain social responsibilities, giving them to the state and washing our hands, as individuals, our hands off it. Okay, so this is what happens with poverty. When the state takes the money from you in the form of taxes and gives it to a single mother, right, who got pregnant when she was a teenager. This is one of the things I saw a lot in England. I used to work with a nun. And, you know, I asked her what she did before she started working with refugees. She said she used to help with women who got pregnant out of wedlock. And she said it was wonderful. It was very fulfilling. They would come and stay with us, and we taught them different skills. We tried to find them jobs. We helped them with when they had their children. We helped them how to take care of the babies. We helped them find homes, make friends, you know. So, and if, I mean, you know, obviously nothing is forced, but when you see somebody's helping you, like you see them face to face, it's a completely, completely different experience. So it's not just a material help, but these nuns were also providing emotional, mental, and spiritual help. And I said, like, what happened? Why did ministry stop? And she said the government started to pay money to single mothers, which is a problem in England, because I have actually met really young girls who intentionally got pregnant so they can collect the government check, because that was much easier than going to college. And the nun said, now they go to the mailbox and here is the check and that's it, right? So the earthly bread is completely divorced from the spiritual bread. If the state takes care of it, that's it. Then the people will start believing in the state to feed them. And this is not to say that we shouldn't try to help the poor, obviously. The method is very important, because man does not live on bread alone. At the end of the day, our most important responsibility to help people get to heaven. So when you divorce the material from spiritual, I don't think you're helping anybody. And that's what exactly socialism does. It divorces the material from the spiritual, and it creates alienation with God. Why do you need God if state gives everything you need? Okay, so that is socialism. Now, what does Islam? Where does it enter? Like Tianxi, like socialism, Islam puts the whole above the unit. In this case, the master above the slave, Allah above the Muslim, the Ummah, which is the collection of all Muslims, above the individual Muslim. So just like socialism, Sharia requires intense coercion, not only because the rules are very hard to follow, especially for women, yes they are, but also it needs to create a strong government. So like in Islam is not only a religious system, it's a political system. Muhammad was not only a religious spiritual leader, he was a political leader. He was the sultan, the king of his the people he conquered. And for centuries, the Ottoman sultans were also the political leaders of the empire and the religious leaders, like the Khalifa, until it was abolished in 1920s in Turkey by Ataturk. Again, Ummah, the whole, is a lot more important than the individual. And if your personal choices, when you stray away from the strict rules, your perversion, doesn't matter how slight it is, will affect the purity of the entire society. Therefore, there must be a sentence. Thus, homosexuals get killed. Just read the Quran about how precise, how little there is room for mercy and even for justice. Because you see, justice is not met with most of these punishments. Okay, so because you cannot corrupt the whole. As a unit, you're nothing. You're nothing but a slave. And if you're righteous in front of Allah anyway, you know what? You'll go to heaven and all will be well. So the idea that you as one person has any value is laughable at the end of the day in Islam and socialism. Because your life is nothing compared to the perfect world that could be achieved by a socialistic state or by a Sharia-ruled world. Okay, now on the other hand, of course, of the spectrum, is that we put individuals above the whole. And I think this is one of the reasons the secularist Western culture has come so far, has strayed so far from the idea that we all belong to God, belong to the church, and we've become so individualistic. So when you put the individual above the society, then we, first of all, stop caring each other. We look at our neighbor, we think that he's poor, and he must have somehow deserved it, because had he worked hard enough, he would have been in a better shape. Right? We have kind of this disdain because, hey, you should be able to pull yourself up from your bootstraps. Is that the phrase? But you should be strong enough. It's that work ethic. I mean, you need to be completely blind to see that some people are actually privileged. I mean, you cannot say that, yes, we are all born equally. No, of course not. This is an unjust world. We are all sinful people, and we have created a sinful, unjust world. This is not heaven. It will never be heaven. So if your neighbor is poor, it is your responsibility to help him out. Right? But in an individualistic society, this just doesn't happen. You know, every man for himself. So what happens when the individual is above the whole is that it all becomes about me, right? My choice, my body. I mean, this transgender movement is one of the results of this completely individualistic society where not only people feel utterly alone and helpless, but also they have no regard for the unity. You're never alone. No man is island. But in a society, we are just so obsessed with being individuals and, you know, express ourselves, be ourselves. My body, my choice, that all goes to the other part, that when the unity is much more important, unit is much more important than the whole. And the same goes for, what is it called, crony capitalism. It's like, look, I worked hard. I know what I need to do. If you were too stupid, I don't care. I was smart enough to take advantage of your stupidity. And I made millions of dollars by not paying just wages. Right? It's all about me. It's all about how I get to higher places, make more money, be happier, with no thought about anybody else. Okay, so there's the whole and the unit. So why I'm talking about this is that our priest talked about, I don't get to listen to the homilies a lot, but for a change, for about 5 minutes, the toddler was quiet. And I was able to listen to some of this Trinity. And he, one of the questions he asked is like, why did God reveal himself so much to tell us about Trinity? Like, we can't understand this concept. We can't come near it. You know, we talked about it. Why did he reveal it? And I've been thinking about this. And I think it comes down to that whole and unit thing. He wanted to give us a glimpse of that perfect relationship between the whole and the unit, between the church and the Christian. His triune nature is the perfect role model for us, even though we can never ever achieve heaven on earth. Tian Shi and the classless society and the perfectly ordered society, they're not possible. It is not going to happen. There is no magic solution that will turn everything into gold. The rusted iron is going to stay iron. But the Trinity shows that a family is not just the sum of father, mother, and the kids. Right? It's a lot more than that. It's much bigger than that. The church is not a sum of its members. It's so much more than that. We are, as the society, as the individuals, we are so infinitely interconnected with each other. The little decisions we make, we are all, they're like all ripples on the water. So the whole is the church. The unit is the individual. So what all these models miss is that every unit is infinitely valuable. We can never sacrifice a unit for the good of the whole. The unit can choose to sacrifice himself as Christ did, but we can never sacrifice the unit. And until every unit of the whole, every Christian of the church, every person of the world is willing to sacrifice themselves just as Christ did for the good of the other, then no system will work. No system will work. And when you look around, when you read all these ideologies, the attempts to create a more just and perfect society, they all fall into the same trap, taking the unit out of the whole, as if we are not interconnected at all. But only in Christianity, there is that idea that every human being is created in the image of God. That's why every human being is infinitely valuable, regardless you're 85 years old, you have Down syndrome, or you can never walk, talk, or contribute to society. You are inherently, infinitely valuable. This is the only place you can find true equality. Before God, we are so, so, so small, but yet so, so, so important that the Creator of the universe became one of us to die for us. Just for me, individually, he would have died if it was just for me. I mean, can you imagine the love that requires? And until we can all start imitating that love, then no system, nothing we come up will work. Least of all socialism, least of all Islam. Again, I keep saying this, it's this secularism, Islam, socialism, they're all part of the same coin. Apparently this coin has three sides. It's amazing. Miracle coin. It has three sides. That's what I've been thinking about, how that idea that every human person is created in the image of God sets Christianity apart from every other philosophy. Not that I quite understand this. This is still a work in progress for me. I think it helps that I once was a communist and a Muslim, and I could see what they're trying to accomplish, which is, in a way, when you look at it in its face value, like when you watch Hero, if you have time, please watch it. You feel like, yeah, I see your point. Yes, isn't it good to kill a few people to have finally peace in the land? If there's one emperor, there will never be more fighting. But there will always be fighting. There will always be poor, because the cause of the fight and the poverty and the famine is not the lack of a perfect system or a perfect leader, but our sinful nature, that we always put ourselves above others. And this could only be avoided through conversion. So that's my two cents. Let me know what you think, because as I said, this is still all developing in my mind, because I am so fascinated. Is socialism is on the rise. This just amazes me. Anyway, so I try to understand people. I try to see where they are coming from, but I am still appalled, especially when I see Catholics defending a system that will inherently give people just earthly bread. This is what the devil wanted when he tempted Christ in the desert. Here, Christ, you have all this power. Ask for it, and all these stones will be turned into bread, and all your worries will be gone. The devil, he knows it. He knows our weakness. And what our Lord says, the man does not live on bread alone. And that's what socialism does, offers earthly bread. Anyway, so it's amazing to see that it's on the rise. It's like this magical unicorn that will solve all our problems. Stop being sarcastic. Okay, I will stop being sarcastic. Okay, I better go to bed when I start talking to myself. It's never a good sign. Courtney, if you're listening, please don't try to get me to therapy. That's crazy. That's crazy. I'm just fine. It's just really late. Okay, so let me know what you think. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and you can always email me at darialittle@gmail.com. And if you haven't yet, please review the podcast. And I would really like to hear what you think about socialism, whether I'm wrong, if I'm not hitting the right thing here, because as I said, theories, you know, they come and go. Also, if you have bought A Beginner's Guide to the Latin Mass, please, please, please leave a review on Amazon. I love hearing what other people think. Also, it helps when we have more reviews. It will help us reach more people. Consider supporting me on Patreon. Thank you very much for listening. Let's live a little and bring the lost to life together.
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.